You're listening to All of It. I'm Kusha Navadar in for Allison Stewart today. In 2016, New Yorker contributing cartoonist Naveed Madavian and his wife made a drastic life change. They moved from San Francisco to a remote cabin in Idaho. No plumbing, no heat. Yes, the landscape was stunning, but it was also harsh. Sometimes the winter was so cold that their car wouldn't start, leaving them stuck at home with dwindling groceries. Their neighbors were friendly, often lending a hand, but Naveed, the child of Iranian immigrants, suddenly found himself in Trump country among people who would say things to him like, "You're not a Muslim, are you?" or use the N-word in casual conversation. As time wore on, Naveed and his wife had to decide whether the joys of life in a beautiful, remote location outweighed the challenges. Naveed writes about his experiences in his new graphic memoir. It's called This Country, Searching for Home in Very Rural America. And when we had him on, we also invited listeners who have experienced it to reflect on moving from an urban setting to a very rural setting. But listeners, because this is an encore presentation, we unfortunately can't take your calls today. I began by asking Madavian how he organized his thoughts and memories in preparation for the memoir.
I wish that I were the type of person who journaled and kept a diary. I did do some landscape sketching, sketches of some of the flora and fauna, but I'm not the type to write about my day-to-day experiences. So when I sat down to write the book, it was actually this incredible experience of being able to sort of sift through my memories. And there was a lot that I had forgotten had happened. And as I, you know, put this list together of all the things that had happened in 3 years, I mean, it felt natural to write the book because so much did happen.
In the book, you and your wife, Emily, right, are considering to make the move from San Francisco. How did you land on Idaho in particular?
We visited on a whim. It was on vacation. Neither of us had been to Idaho. We picked a random spot on the map, and that was it. We went, and I mean, the mountains are breathtaking. It's an incredible view, and it just seemed so full of promise. And it was a big decision to make the move. I mean, it was a romantic thing, right? Picking up, moving from the city to middle of nowhere America. But then there was also the practicality of it. Land was cheap. We could build a home. And that's not something that we could do in San Francisco, as everyone knows.
Yeah, as everyone. I moved from San Francisco to New York City, so I don't know if that's going from the frying pan to the fire, but whatever, that's another conversation. What were some of the challenges in rural living that you didn't fully anticipate or understand?
I'm a city boy. I was born in Miami, lived in my 20s in the Bay Area. So like first and foremost, it was the seasons. When I first got there, that first winter, January didn't get above zero. Wow. the entire time. It got down to negative 37. Immediately, neither cars would work. And so we were just like there. But I remember even in that moment when neither cars were starting, there was just this sense of like, okay. I was like, okay with it because we were there. That was the plan. And even if we couldn't get into town, there was something that felt very liberating about being in the middle of nowhere and, you know, just getting to explore and figure out, well, what does that look like? Mm. So definitely the nature. And I feel like in the book, the land is maybe the central character of the book. And so I try to lean into that and to capture those moments of quiet, that moment of extreme weather and what it was just like to be in a place like that.
There were a bunch of skills that I heard or that I saw you pick up over the course of the book, and I don't want to ruin anything, but it includes like learning how to use an axe. One thing that I think a producer on the show will love is learning to identify birds by their songs. Was there a skill that you picked up that you're especially proud of?
Yeah, I mean, the running joke initially was about using a chainsaw. And at first it was like, absolutely not. But then, I mean, you have to know how to use it in order to get firewood. But I do remember there was this one distinct moment. I had these coveralls, which is like puffy overalls, they're insulated. And I had been chainsawing. And then I looked down and there was this just like the insulation, the cotton was everywhere. And there was this long gash going from the sort of top left of my chest to the bottom right of my stomach. So I think somewhere in there, the chainsaw had nipped a little bit of it. So that for the remainder of the time, it was a nice reminder of the skill that I had picked up and how dangerous, I guess, it was to learn, but then handy.
And I'd love to also talk a little bit about the people in Idaho. It's a pretty complicated relationship that you describe in terms of the folks that you meet and how they show up in ways that you expect and that you don't expect. What were some ways that people really showed up for you during those years in Idaho?
Yeah, I think that complex is a good way to describe it. And that's what I was trying to capture in the book. I think that I went into it with some preconceived notions. And when I tell people that I was a Middle Easterner moving to Idaho, they probably also, you know, my mother, there was lots of protests as I was moving because she was concerned. But there is this ethos that small town living has, and I think it's a cliche that big cities are alienating, but you don't really get that until you see the way that people in small towns do show up for you. And so, you know, one of my closest friends who I met there, Josiah in the book, he happened upon me when my car had gone off the road. I was stuck in the snow, and I couldn't get out, and everyone always stops whenever somebody appears to be in trouble. And he helped get me out of the snow. And so I feel like that was just a recurring thing where people would just stop by to see if you needed help.
Can I bring up another story about Josiah, actually, since you brought him up? There's a really beautiful moment in the book, which I got to say, being from Iran myself, I moved when I was really young. It really struck me, which is when Josiah learned that one of your favorite foods is kebab. And so he showed up to your house with elk kebabs, right? And so I just got to ask, for all the folks out there who might be into Persian cuisine, how do elk kebabs compare to kebab kubide?
I mean, my parents were pretty skeptical, but elk kebabs were better. They were great. They were much... Yeah, and it may have just been the experience of eating elk kebabs. And that night there were, I got to see the Northern Lights for the first time. So it just felt like something had clicked in my time there. There was a moment where I remember he was texting and he had asked, for those of you who don't know, in Iranian food, saffron is a big part of the cuisine. And he had texted asking if I had any saffron because he didn't think that the local market would have it. And so I was able to provide that for but it was better, and I haven't had it since, and I don't know if I'll get to again.
And we have a caller that I'd love to hear from right now, Mimi from Manhattan. Hi, Mimi.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to share my story of moving from an urban to a rural place. I grew up in a big metropolitan city in India. And after I came to the United States, I lived in Chicago and Minneapolis. And then I moved to a tiny, tiny place in Western Michigan for work. And I remember the first weekend there, I came back to work on Monday and someone told me, "Hey, were you there down the river?" And I was like, "Yeah, did you see me?" And they were like, "No, my grandmother saw you." What? And I said, "Well, you know, they said a brown woman with long black hair, so who else could it be?" I was like, "Oh, I guess I'm the only one."
How did it feel to be described as, "Oh, the brown woman with long black hair"? Was that the first time that you've been described that way, or what was that experience like for you?
Well, I did feel like the pressure of being a cultural ambassador. And that is also the only point of time in life where I was a literal traffic stopper. Like, people would actually stop on the cars to look at me and point at me. But overall, the people were very warm and welcoming. And, you know, they wanted to take me fishing and teach me how to shoot, none of which I'd ever done. But the only thing that I struggled with was... how Christian the atmosphere was. I actually had people tell me to my face well, you're a good person, but, you know, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, so you're going to go to hell, and there's nothing to be done about it.
Hmm.
And how do you react to that, you know?
Yeah, well, first of all, Mimi, thank you so much for calling. A couple things that stood out to me from what you were saying, and Navid, I'd love to get your take on this, the idea of being a cultural ambassador and the idea of having to navigate folks who are kind, but then they say things that really you don't know how to respond. How is that for you, listening to Mimi's experience?
Yeah, I mean, Mimi's experience, I mean, I was smiling along because all of it sounded so familiar. I mean, I also felt like the cultural ambassador growing up in Miami and then moving to San Fran. I was never a minority, but then being in a town of 500, it was my first experience of being a minority. Mm. And one of the jokes that I make in the book, a recurring joke, is that everyone in small towns knows who you are. So first time we showed up, at that time we were just camping out on the land, and our neighbors showed up and they knew who we were, knew our names, and they're debating where, you know, my name was from. And so I think that sometimes it felt like, was it because I was a person of color, or is it just because people in small towns, right? You only have 500, any new face is going to be of interest. But there definitely were moments where I felt like a cultural ambassador. A moment that didn't make it into the book was, I was at Josiah, my friend's mother's wedding, and a woman came up to me and said, oh, I heard that you're from Iran. And she said, my children are interested about, you know, they want to read the Quran. What do I do? And she was just so scared. And I was like, well, you can read it with them. Well, you know, I thought, like, only I had my pocket Quran I could pull out to read it with her. But it was, yeah, there is this experience of feeling like you are speaking for a larger group of people, and yeah, trying to negotiate that with just being at a wedding.
You know, it reminds me of my own work outside of all of it. I work on a show called Notes from America with Kai Wright. And one of our goals on that show is to find connection and insight in a divided time. And it seems like your experience is right in the center of that target. Did your time in Idaho give you any insight into how you achieved that goal or anything like that?
Yeah, I think it was just time to spend with people on an individual level. Not to bring up Josiah again, but there was this one moment, again, didn't make it into the book, but he came up to me one day and said that he was apologizing for something that his father had said, and I hadn't met his father before, so I didn't know what he was talking about. But I guess his dad had referred to me as that terrorist. And later on, when we were invited to Josiah's dad's house, he came up to me, apologized for this thing that I didn't, there was no reason for me to have even known about it. I wasn't in the room, but he apologized and then gave my wife, Emily, this handkerchief that had belonged to his mother, and this beautiful silk handkerchief, which he still has. But it was this incredible moment of humanity, and it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been there, if I hadn't developed this relationship with Josiah. And I hope that even though that there is this pressure to act as a cultural ambassador, I think that in many ways, I feel like I got out as much as I think that they did from these interactions that lasted over a long period. I think it took the 3 years, but I think that went both ways.
Yeah, time is a huge theme in your book, that idea of time being the key ingredient towards bridging what some see as a divide, I think is really insightful as well. And there's a text we just received that I think brings us to another part of that very nicely. It reads, my family moved from Queens to West Virginia in the mid-90s. The move was a bigger culture shock than moving from Pakistan to the U.S. Fortunately, we all left West Virginia before it became Trump country. Because of social media, I've seen how dangerous the politics of my neighbors and some friends would have been for my family. I'm still undoing all the whiteness I tried to take on during the decade I was there. What does that make you feel, Navid?
Yeah, I think that I was lucky in that I moved there right after Trump's election. In the last few months that I was there, I remember driving and seeing 3 percenter flags. The Liberty Conference happened a little bit after that, which was an ultra right wing conference. And having visited during COVID, it definitely felt like there was this shift where what initially drew me to the place, this openness, this welcomingness that I felt from the small town ethos, it felt like that had sort of evaporated with COVID, where, you know, masks were not a thing. The thin blue line hats were everywhere. And it felt like this caring that we had for one another, which I think a lot of people experienced during COVID, with like masking up, caring for people who were health compromised, just didn't exist there. And it felt much more political. And I do wonder what being there now would be like, now that things just feel much more divided, where those sort of nuggets have grown.
Yeah, and your book almost could be not necessarily a tool, but like a jumping off point for people to engage in that conversation, I think. So, you know, in the about minute we've got left, what do you hope people take from reading your memoir?
I mean, I think it's a cliche, but a cliche for a reason. I think people are people. And so much of what I experienced there was that cognitive dissonance where people would use the N-word or make jokes about ragheads, but then would invite me back, you know, next time I'm around in town. And so I think that there is this way that people engage with you on an individual level, whether they see you, and then the way that we experience one another in politics at a sort of macro level. And so I hope that people take away that at the end of the day, we're each just trying to figure out where we belong, who we are. And I think fundamentally people are good outside of politics.
That was my conversation with New Yorker contributing cartoonist Naveed Madavian. His new graphic memoir is called This Country, Searching for Home in Very Rural America. Stay tuned for more All of It. Next hour, we've got a sci-fi movie about aliens who take an interest in the rituals around human romance, a documentary about telemarketing scammers, and a new novel about a woman who learns to time travel. That's all coming up right after the news. Stick around.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.